Welcome back to Alternative Realities. I'm David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. 2020 and 2021 were banner years of the private equity market as fiscal and monetary stimulus boosted fundraising, deal, and exit activity. More recently, however, macro uncertainty and higher interest rates have put a damper on the asset class, which is highly dependent on leverage. Still, better than expected economic growth has supported recent performance. As companies, particularly in the technology sector, wait longer to IPO, the private equity has become an increasingly important way to get exposure to the high growth potential of early stage companies. For decades, investors have used private equity to supplement their public equity allocations, enhancing returns, reducing volatility, and providing access to secular market trends. Today, I'm joined by my colleague, Ashmi Mehrotra, the co-head and portfolio manager within our global private equity group, to discuss the trends and investment opportunities she's seeing in the asset class. Ashmi, thank you for joining us, and welcome to Alternative Realities.
David, thank you so much for having me.
So Ashmi, first, can you give us more detail on the types of investments you focus on?
Great, thank you, David. So we've been very active on three parts of the private equity market. Number one is on primary investments. Number two is secondary investments. And the third is co-investments. And we do those types of investments across both venture capital as well as buyout areas of the market.
Okay. And for listeners who are newer to private equity markets, can you just go into a little more detail on what we mean by secondaries and co-investments?
Sure. So secondaries are investments where we are purchasing existing positions or existing interests in private equity funds from other limited partners, from other investors. Those are called LP secondaries because they're driven by an LP that's looking to sell. There are also another part of secondaries, which are called GP-led secondaries, and that's increasingly a large part of the secondary market, about 45 to 50% GP-led versus LP-led. And the GP-led market, as the name suggests, right, they're led by GP. So it's basically when a private equity general partner is selling oftentimes one single asset or more of its companies, multi-asset, of its portfolio companies to a new fund, right? Where they're going to look for a new set of limited partners. Some limited partners may roll, some may choose to sell. So it provides early liquidity to some and potentially, you know, those that want to roll and stay in can do that. And then some that are new can come into this GP-led continuation vehicle. An important part of this is that the GP continues to actually manage that fund and those companies or that company within that continuation vehicle. I'll just stay on secondaries for a minute because a question might be, well, what are the advantages of secondaries? Like, why would you want to purchase an LP interest or a GP-led interest in a, you know, in a private equity company or a fund? And there's a couple of reasons. So one is with an LP secondary where you're buying into an existing fund where you have you know, a number of assets already, you're able to diligence that fund. There's no blind pool risk in terms of, well, what is the unfunded that I'm putting into this fund? Like, what is that going to be invested in, right? So you have an ability to have full visibility to the existing portfolio and do your diligence. The other thing that can be attractive or has a potential benefit to a secondary is that you are mitigating the J-curve, right? Because you're buying into an existing portfolio. And therefore, that portfolio, if it's more mature, could also have a shorter duration, right? Shorter time to exit those companies. On average, private equity companies are held, call it 5 to 7+ years, and venture even longer. If you buy into a secondary where there's more mature companies already in there, well, maybe there's a one to five year hold period, 1 to 3 years in some cases. And so there should be a shorter duration as well, which has a potential benefit. The other thing is you're immediately diversified, right? You're buying into an existing portfolio of 12 to 15 companies in the average fund, and you're automatically diversified in terms of where the exposure is that you're getting into. Now, turning to your question on co-investments, what are co-investments? Co-investments are equity investments directly into private companies, but they're alongside a private equity sponsor. Those are increasingly active area of the market, particularly with the dynamics that are existing today, which we'll get to. But the potential benefits of a co-investment is that you are accessing more concentrated return enhancing opportunities, right? So you're potentially directly investing into a company, and you can, you know, build a more concentrated position to hopefully, you know, enhance your overall returns in your portfolio. The other thing similar to secondaries is that, well, there's a shorter J curve too, right? You're not doing a primary investment where usually the term is 10 to 15 years for that fund. You're buying into a company directly where your hold period could be anywhere between 3 to 5 years. The other thing that could be potentially attractive about co-investments and why you're seeing more activity there too is that they usually have attractive fees on them. So oftentimes, if you're a primary investor with that general partner and you're doing a co-investment alongside them, there are frequently lower fees or no fees on those co-investments. And so you have the ability to average down your overall fees within your private equity portfolio. And then lastly, there's an ability to curate the types of sector and portfolio exposure that you want within your private equity program, right? Maybe you are more, you want more technology exposure because it's lacking maybe on the primary positions that you have. You have the ability to build concentrated positions in a curated way within sectors that you want to. So there's so for those aspects and those benefits, potential benefits, we like both secondaries and co-investments.
It sounds like it's almost, to me, it sounds almost like you can miss the first act of the private equity play. And the first act is both frequently boring in terms you don't get to invest your money, and also it's all negative cash flow. But this way you get in, you know, when the play's going and you can actually see what the companies are, and you have an opportunity to actually deploy your capital into actual private equity holdings as opposed to a fund which will eventually get invested, but could be some time. It's certainly an interesting space. I know that you also intend to focus on small and middle market funds. First of all, can you talk a little bit about that, but also do you focus on any particular sectors or types of companies?
Yeah, so we are focused on building diversified portfolios of private companies on the equity side in less cyclical growth areas of the global economy. We focus on small and mid-market. There's a lot of firms that may focus on that area of the market. We define it very specifically as funds that are less than $3 billion in fund size and companies that have less than $1.5 billion of enterprise value. And we do that for a few reasons. I mean, our mandate is pretty broad across private equity. We've been doing this for over 44 years, but we still continue to focus on the small and middle market. And there's a few very specific reasons why we do. The first is it is the largest part of the market. So if you look at companies in the United States that have revenues from 10 to 100 million annually, there are over 130,000 of them. In fact, they're 10 times greater in number than the largest end of the market, right, where there's 5,000 or 6,000 companies. And so we have a larger opportunity set from which to invest in. That's the first reason. The second reason is there's usually lower entry prices, right, on average 20% lower than the larger end of the market. And why is that? Well, it's because oftentimes these are family-owned businesses, right? There's the first time that they are accessing private capital in a more institutional manner. And the reason why, and of course, every seller is concerned about price, of course, but they're also concerned about other things, right? They're like their legacy. Usually families or existing family owners are rolling some part of their equity into the new transaction. And so they want a second bite at the apple, if you will. And so they're concerned about price, but also about other things. Who is the manager that they're working with? Are they going to preserve the key parts of what made the company what it was, right? Like a leader in whatever space it is. Are they going to preserve that legacy when they sell it, right, you know, later on? And so on average, the entry prices tend to be more attractive, on average 20% lower than the larger end. The other important point is, especially these days when we have the rate environment that we're in, smaller companies are usually less levered. So we're looking to make returns not on financial engineering, but on operational improvements within these businesses. And on average, the lower middle market is 20% less levered than the larger end of the market. The other thing that's important to know, I talked about operational improvements. This is when private equity can really shine, right? Bringing an operational focused playbook to bear with resources and know-how across portfolios that they've built over a long period of time to the current situation where they are looking to improve all parts of that family-owned business in many cases, and build a more strategic asset, whether they're growing organically or inorganically, where they're doing add-on acquisitions, and building a more strategic asset for multiple buyers right at the end. And that's the other reason why we really like this end of the market. We're not reliant on the IPO market to exit. As you may know, the IPO market has been quite difficult lately. Last year, there were only 14 venture-backed IPOs. This year, year-to-date, there's 7. And so again, you know, this compared to 2021, where there was over 180 venture-backed IPOs. So the IPO market has obviously been more challenging to access.
Yep.
So if you are...
I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, broadly speaking, we've had a slowdown in IPO activities, a slowdown in M&A activity. When, how does it affect your strategy overall?
Yeah, certainly there has been a lack of exits across the private equity landscape. If you look at the data, last year was a 15-year low in terms of liquidity back to existing limited partners in their private equity program. And that's driven by lack of IPOs, to your point, and also lack of M&A given the increase in rates. And so we are less, our portfolio has been less affected by those macro trends because we are in the small bid market. We are exiting most often to other private equity firms on the larger end, which continue to have the vast majority of dry powder, right? And they are looking to access new deals from other private equity funds, as well as to strategics. And so strategics continue to be focused on private companies and are acquisitive there as well. And so we're not reliant just on an IPO market to exit our companies. And that's another benefit of the small middle market.
Interesting. So what dynamics do you think are going to drive private equity markets going forward? And as the sort of current fundraising crunch resolves, what opportunities are you most excited about?
Yeah, so there's a few dislocations that are existing in our market today that we like, and we're taking advantage of those dislocations with the dry powder that we have on behalf of our clients. So the first thing is I talked about the lack of exits in this environment. That is driving more LPs to put positions up in the secondary market. I talked about what an LP secondary is before. We continue to see a very, very active large secondary market in terms of, you know, the types of funds and the types of investors that continue to access that to sell positions. We are looking at buying high quality buyout oriented fund positions at healthy discounts, 5 to 20%, as a percentage of NAV. But importantly, we're buying into high quality portfolios where we believe there will continue to be appreciation and shorter duration because exits will come back at some point over the next couple of years. And so that we've been very active on new LP secondaries there. And I don't think that's going to abate anytime soon, given the volatility in the exit market. The other thing, to your point, you're exactly right, David, on the dislocation that exists within fundraising. Because there's been a lack of liquidity back to LPs, they have consolidated where they are putting new commitments, right, within their private equity program. So they're probably going to, maybe they'll have the same amount that they're putting forth in new commitments, but maybe that's more consolidated with a few private equity firms versus 10, right, that they may have done if they got more liquidity back. So that gives us an opportunity to take advantage of potential slowdown in fundraising where we are taking 18, 24 months to do our diligence on a new primary fund, coming into a final closing, working with that GP on potential co-investments alongside them, coming into the final close at cost plus interest, where we see embedded value in those, in that portfolio, right? On average, private equity funds, if you look at the peak, we're taking about 3 to 6 months to raise that fund, to raise those funds. Now they're taking, like I said, 18 to 24 months, more in line with the long-term averages of how long it takes to actually raise a private equity fund. Well, that gives us time, right, to evaluate the GP across all the factors that we look at, spend more time with them, diligencing deals alongside them, potentially do co-investments on a no-fee basis. And so there's just more creative ways to access different parts of the private equity market, given these two dislocations that we're seeing.
Yeah, Ashwin, it doesn't sound like a business for amateurs. Thank you so much for all your professional insights today on this. I'm sure we'll have you back on Alternative Realities.
Thank you very much.
This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.